Very good afternoon and welcome to the second hour of the 120 show. Good afternoon to you, Carlo.
I'm aging rapidly.
Right. Yes. Going to fall off the chair in a minute. Welcome back. We're going through the various different news stories our panellists have chosen for us this week. Let's just welcome them once again. Hattie Burrowing, who is a film, a TV documentary maker, producer. She's worked on various different projects with Channel 4, BBC, was just working recently, as we mentioned earlier, on a fantastic film here with the BBC, which was, they spent a week blindfolded in Dubai. What are you working on at the moment? Any projects coming up, Patty?
I've got lots of sort of corporate work, which just seems to dominate the work I do here. But I've actually just signed the snooker world champion, Ronnie O'Sullivan, to do an 8-part series, which is quite exciting. It's a bit sort of out of the usual for me. I mean, I'm very arts and culture based normally, or doing my sort of secret corporate work. But he's fantastic. I just was in the UK doing some taster filming with him. And
what's he going to be doing?
Well, it's all a bit under wraps at the moment, but a bit of an adventure.
Ah.
He's lovely. He's had a really interesting story. I mean, he's quite sheltered. He's very much in the world of snooker, which is not my world. It was quite funny actually, because we're filming and he was playing snooker and they kept putting the blue ball back in the middle of the table, and I had a complete fit. I was like, think of the continuity.
Yes, you can't do that.
I need to keep putting this thing back on the table. Apparently it's the way it has to happen. But he's a real kind of hero. He's won the world championship 4 times, which is, you know, no mean feat.
So you're all sort of in the world of snooker right now.
It's a dirty world, but I like it. I do. You know, he drove me in a sports car from Chigwell to London in 30 minutes.
Whoa.
I know. I'm like, wait, I like this. That's one of the things I'm doing, and then otherwise lots of various things, an Indian Biennale that's happening end of the year.
Oh, yes, in Kerala.
And the Kochi Biennale.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful.
Week, which, I'm looking after all their content.
And, that'll be fun. I've heard some great things about it, actually.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that, actually.
Well, thank you very much. Well, let's go back to our stories. And we've got a bit of traffic news coming through. Apparently there are tailbacks on the Sheikhzayed Road at Gantout, Dubai bound. Thank you very much for those. Do keep us updated, I said, but when it's safe to do so, on 4001. Whose turn is it?
I think we should absolutely... I think we should absolutely make sure that interviewers are blindfolded. Let's blindfold interviewers.
Well, so that you don't see
so that they don't know who it is that they're interviewing.
Yeah. What do you think?
That would be a pretty good kind of, you know, documentary piece.
Well, they used to be. I mean, even here, I still think you have to send pictures, don't you, for when you apply on your CV, whereas I think in the UK it's very much sort of non-PC. You can't ask for a picture. You can't ask for a specific nationality.
Birthday.
Some do. Yeah.
I mean, like banks and a lot of the kind of what sort of international corporations do. There was a story on Gawker the other day, actually, of this, I think it was a female, who applied for quite a serious job and accidentally attached the wrong JPEG, and she sent a JPEG of Nicolas Cage looking completely bonkers.
It was
so funny. I mean, he looked completely mad.
Very funny.
Yeah, I wonder. I wonder if it would work. I mean, it would be great to do a little bit of an experiment on it, wouldn't it? If you did send you a CV with a picture of some beautiful-looking woman, and then if you sent of a sort of someone not quite so gorgeous, if you'd get the interview or not. Maybe we should do our own little bit of research and see if it works.
Investigative.
Yes.
What are the stories? What's coming up
next?
Well,
let's go back to Michael. What's your next story, Michael?
Well, certainly not the serious story, if everyone's laughing.
No.
The last thing I would do is introduce morbidity.
I won't.
Just on the issue of political correctness, I came across a great article. I'm a huge golf fanatic. I like to follow the sport. I also enjoy playing it. And came across this article. The professional golf tour has 4 majors each year, and the last 13 majors have been won by 12 different people. And so this notion of winning a major and then going on to play another major and winning that is something that very, very rarely happens, particularly of late. In the case of U.S. Open golf champions, going on and playing the British Open and winning it, it's only happened 6 or 7 times, I think 6 times, in the past 112 years, so it's quite significant. So to the story, the current U.S. Open champion, Webb Simpson, who is a young 26-year-old American married with a child, is set to play in the British Open, which starts next week, and has come out saying, actually, I'm not going to play at it. My wife is expecting. She's expecting at that exact time. I think you'll all appreciate I'm not going to do it.
Mm.
And what's interesting is this just firestorm of criticism that's come back. I mean, it's probably equally divided, to be fair. But people are saying, wait a minute, hang on. You've got a professional obligation. You have an obligation to the sport. You have an obligation to history. This is so significant. Who are you to be taking time out personally to enjoy the birth of your second child? This is outrageous. And then and I'm reading it and I'm sort of thinking, actually, that's kind of valid, because the natural reaction is to say the birth of your children is so significant that it's without question that if you were able to specify the delivery date to that degree of accuracy that you would just opt out, which is what he's doing. And he's saying, listen, I'm a professional golfer. God willing, I'll be playing in the British Open for at least another 10 years, 20 years, what have you. But I'm shocked. And it's made me actually think, I'm a father. I've got two children. The delivery of my children were very significant dates for me. So I don't know. I mean, it's made me really stop and think. If I were he and I were at the pinnacle of my game, and you know, athletes only have a window of opportunity. That's something like, I don't know, 5 years, 6 years or something.
Yeah.
I'd really have to stop and think about it. I don't know. I probably, you know. In the interest of staying married, I'm going to say on radio that I would not do it. But it's interesting because it makes you stop and think.
C-section?
Well,
induce it or whatever.
Even then, I mean, you know, you want to be around, don't you, for your wife or your child. I don't know. Let's put it out to our listeners. What do you think? Would that date be? I mean, nothing would change your mind
What's interesting? I think because professional golfers are not a part of a team, so they're sort of free agents.
So they're not letting the team.
But what if he were an Olympian, and what if his wife were delivering during the 2 weeks of the London Olympics? What would you do?
It's such precious.
And how is that any different? I mean, does it matter whether it's the British Open Golf Tournament, which happens every year, or whether it's the Olympics for which you've qualified, which happens every 4 years, and you may never get a chance to compete again?
Well,
it's interesting. It makes you think.
Would he have had advisory, Michael, or was this a very private and personal decision?
Would he have had?
Yes.
No, I think it was a very, I'm going to reflect my bias here, but I suspect he didn't think about it at all. I suspect he thought, these are the dates, I mean, I'm not doing it.
You know? He's got time, surely. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's not like he's at the end of his game and et cetera.
Well, how do you know, though? The other thing about golf is it's very, very streaky. So it's a bit like, I don't gamble, but I suspect it's a bit like gambling, where you're on a streak, you know, and if you're winning, you're likely to win again. And then, you know, if you don't, so he will have foregone this opportunity. What if he just, you know, lapses into mediocrity the rest of his life? Will he look back on this and say, I was at the top of the world, and I chose not to exercise this option?
It's interesting. Has any light bulb flashed on the wife? Is she kind of being picked up on as maybe a wife that's kind of beating him around the neck, saying, you will be here?
I'm looking at her photo in this article, and I would tend to agree with whatever she would ask me to do.
Oh, really? Like,
yeah,
I would.
And if she were to ever send me a CV with her photo attached, she would be hired, I can tell you that.
But I suppose, I mean, it's all about priorities, isn't it? And he's obviously chosen his priority, which is family first,
right.
And not golf first or work first. And, you know, good for him. Maybe it wouldn't have been such an easy decision to make, because not only have you got the game, but I'm sure he's got sponsors on his back as
absolutely,
well.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely,
commitments to them.
Absolutely.
Chunk
also,
of money
how many
as well.
Tournaments are there a year? I mean, he goes from one to the other, doesn't he? I mean, it happens be a big one.
Well,
least,
he does, but at his level, really, you're talking about competing for these majors, of which there are only four. It's tremendously seasonal, right? They all happen at the same time, and then he plays another tournament, sure, but these four sort of happen within a 4 month window.
So he's missing out on all four?
No, he's just missing one of the four.
Yeah, I don't see a big deal.
Yeah.
God, family,
golf.
God, family, and business, and in that order, says one of our listeners.
Yeah.
Good for him, and what use of the money if you're not with your family?
Yeah, true. I mean, yeah, I'd love to understand his sort of process of thinking, you know, thinking it through and making that final decision. I'm sure many people have been put on the spot with that as well in various different situations, you know, in their lives. And you did raise a question about the Olympics, and I think, yeah, definitely, there must be people in the Olympics that have had to sort of make some kind of decisions of that. But I suppose it comes down to the dedication of sports people, men and women around the world, that it really is such a... a phenomenal commitment of your entire life. And I was watching some of the tennis. I was watching, I think, was it Serena Williams that was in the finals? That
yes,
won?
Serena.
I mean, she's just unbelievable. She's great. Particularly after what, you know, the what happened to her last year, where she was
cut her foot, she was in the hospital, she had a lung issue,
seriously,
blood
yeah.
clot.
Yeah, she came back, she fought back, she won. I mean,
her
that is
died as well. She had a sibling who died.
Oh, I didn't even realize that.
Venus. Yeah. She had a sibling.
I mean, it's absolutely incredible. And I think just the utter, I mean, I would love to sort of just get a glimpse into the minds of these sort of athletes, of what they go through to commit themselves to competing and to winning and all these sorts of things. And I suppose, I mean, she's only 30, which is considered relatively, well, she's kind of almost reached her peak now.
I think she's
done,
yeah. Or conventional wisdom would suggest that she's getting to the end of her career.
Another text message says, no point being happy at work if you're sad at home. That's a nice one.
But it's also a decision about, you know, how much of you is publicly owned,
right?
And what is it that you retain for yourself? What's private?
Well, look at Tiger Woods. I suppose he's a prime example of the whole public thing coming into the private thing coming into the public arena, and having a massive effect on his career as well, and on his game.
Right.
It's the degree he went to, I think.
Well, we're going to take another quick break, another text message just before we go. David said, seriously guys, what if his wife dies on that day and he's not there to say goodbye? Of course he has to be there at the birth. I agree.
Yeah.
I agree with you, David. Yes, we're just sort of
just one tournament
asking the question. Do stay with us. We're going to take another quick break. We've got more stories to cover when we come back.